David?
Nope.
Sorry. David isn't here right now. He had to go someplace quiet. We're in charge now. You know what we have to do.
No.
Revenge.
No. Justice.
Right. Justice. We're here for justice. Because you couldn't protect us.
Me?
Daddy. The Leaver. The Great Abandoner. Who put a monster in our head and then threw us away. Adoption. Betrayal.
No.
David.
Daddy. David. Wake up!
Daddy.
Wake up!
Daddy? Daddy.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Rima.
And I'm Aaron.
And this is the Legion Podcast, episode 26. It's our top three highlights for Legion Season 3, Episode 7, Chapter 26. We're almost done. We got one more left.
Oh, sad, sad, sad.
I'm sad. I don't know. Art, what about you, Aaron?
There's really nothing like this on television, let alone in the superhero space, and it's been a lot of fun. But I guess I always would rather have a well-crafted story in the maybe a little too soon than a show stretched out beyond recognition. So it's sad, but also I think they're being wise.
Absolutely,
I totally agree.
It's weird too, doing a podcast on a show when it ends. It's a little bit of a different quality. You've probably ended a bunch of shows, huh?
I have. I've actually really ended them. I mean, my podcast drove them to
that's
the ground.
That's right.
That's the other thing is knowing that, like, I'll never revisit this feed again.
Yeah.
It's like a ghost feed.
I know. Mm-hmm. It's like the end of a relationship. Well, it was really fun to know you.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's
good while it lasted. Had a good run.
Breaking Good's that hot girl I just don't call anymore. Yeah.
Exactly. I might go back on my Ash versus Evil Dead. We're going to go see the Evil Dead musical and get blood splattered on us. So we might do an extra one.
Nice.
Jealous.
Yeah, you have to.
Do they hand out like those like ponchos like when you were at a... Oh, who's the
comedian
that's
special?
Yeah, I think
so. Or a big thing of plastic that they drape over the front row or something. I don't know.
Nice.
But that's another show. Let's get into this show. Chapter 26. Did you guys like it? Rima?
I did. I thought it was a pretty good buildup for the finale. I do worry a little bit about how much more we have left to go with just one episode, like tying everything up. And I know that we probably won't get all of the answers to questions. I'm sure there are still some little things out there dangling that, you know, are just going to be left hanging there. And I'm okay with that. But I still feel like there's kind of a lot happening for 1 hour of television. Because I think I looked it up and I'm pretty sure it is going to be 1 hour. It's not going to be, you know, too extended out. It's
going to
be like a two-part. Yeah. So, I wonder. I mean, I have faith, but I just like, wow, how's he going to get all of that? But I like this episode. I thought it was a really good build-up and certainly left you hanging there at the end as to what comes next.
I mean, I was thinking similar, like it's become more and more clear that the major theme of this show is like the impact of parenting, and a huge hole is we don't even know who raised the main character. Like they're just these ciphers. And I'm wondering if we're going to get that next episode. I really hope so. Mm-hmm. I think it's important.
Yep.
Anyway, what'd you think, Aaron?
I liked it. I want to echo some of the same concerns I have that Rima has, the fact that it like feels like there is so much left to go. And also there's a few things in this episode where I just straight up don't understand what happened or how the thing that happened happened.
Thank you, yes.
and like, there's a couple points where, and I don't mean like, well, it's like, it's not literally true. Like, these people are having a rap battle and you understand. But like, Sid hit a time demon with a hammer and it died. Like, what? How did that? There's a couple things like that could pay off next episode, but also could maybe be signs that there's some shortcuts taken to bring this in 3 seasons. And as I said, I have faith in Noah Hawley, and there's nothing that can happen in the next episode that would make me think this journey is not worth taking. There's a couple things where it's like, man, I wish this was a little bit more tethered to reality so I could reliably make guesses and predictions on what was going to happen from moment to moment.
What if it was just an hour of David's face? Would you still feel like the journey was worth it?
This isn't like a Game of Thrones where this last entire season this is much more a journey, and if we get to a destination that's recognizable and comprehensible from a human frame point, I'll be delighted.
Okay, let's get into our top three. Rima, number three.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about Sid and the timeline. So that kind of, you know, talking a little bit about what you brought up there, Aaron, and how she, you know, was able to overcome a time demon. They didn't seem that easy to take over. It seemed like David was the only one, you know, that was able to have any effect on them whatsoever. So it was kind of interesting she was able. And I guess Carrie was also able to take a couple out, right, in one of the other episodes.
She did take one out last episode, yeah, and said this, yeah, I think we're going to win, so maybe
I just think the
power of positive thinking.
They take some inspiration from like Looney Tunes or Tom and Jerry sometimes on this show. It's like the hook that dragged the dude off, you know, a few weeks ago. I thought it was interesting she hit him and then it looked like he fell, but they didn't look down or anything, and I think it just disappeared. But it was, I do feel like it was just like, I don't think they're going to follow up on it next week.
Yeah, maybe not. And maybe it's because they're getting more used to them. They get used to, maybe if they catch them off guard or something. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, just because you can hit one with a hammer, there could be an infinite number of them if they just keep multiplying, you know?
Yeah, which they look like they were popping out of the furnace like a clown car.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that I think would be a problem. But, you know, I'm curious what you guys would have thought, and if I'm the only one that thinks that pre-reborn Sydney would have killed baby David, like before.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I think there's a good chance.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think that was probably the whole point of last week, is that she approached this whole thing with a new mindset than what she would have.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad I wasn't alone thinking so. And yeah, that was probably the whole point of what it was that she went through. And, you know, her speech to Gabrielle when she was outside chopping wood, and she's telling Gabrielle that you have to love him, make him feel safe, and that the world depends on it. And I feel like that was such a heavy thing to say for anyone, just any like normal person. But, you know, she has to know Gabrielle's struggling with mental illness, and even I think possibly postpartum depression. And what she says to her seems as effective as telling a depressed person they should just be happy.
Cheer up.
It's okay. Smile. You'll be fine or something. And it's like, no pressure, by the way. You know, your son and the world basically depends on how much you love this kid.
And she seemed like she wanted to, but I really had no confidence that she has the capability to do what Sid's asking her.
When she, exactly. I mean, that was the gut punch in that scene when Gabrielle's like, you know, I understand. And she's like, are you really here? Like, yeah. I think Sid then realized, God, because here's the thing. I think you're exactly right, Rima. She did nothing to advance her cause. But I'm like, what would you say to a person like Gabrielle in like maybe 30 minutes of contact you're going to have before you get ripped back through to space time? Like, it's almost like they're trying to, I think what they're trying to do is set this dichotomy between David trying to go back and fix things versus her trying to go back and fix things, and how it just is not possible. Like, I don't think there's any way to save David the way things are going down right now.
I feel like they're laying the the foundation for why David did end up getting put up for adoption or whatever happened. Because if you put all this pressure on Gabrielle, who has had all this past drama and just, I don't think, has the psychological resources to be the kind of loving parent that Sid's asking her to be, mm-hmm. that she might just go, well, I can't do it, so let me find somebody who can. So maybe we'll see that next week.
Yeah, I'm wondering how Charles gets boxed out of that situation.
Right. Is he just the absent father or what? Because it really does seem like they're painting him as the healthy good guy, but he is gone a lot. So yeah, I'm wondering too what role he's going to play.
Well, and I just think maybe, I mean, Sid said, well, I'll stay here because, you know, I know now when she had her second childhood, when she's telling Carrie about her experience and this is what needs to happen, you know, she acts like that she's going to stay there. Like, is this what's going to happen? Like, she's like, I don't know if something is going to happen to present David because he can't be saved, but she can stay there and make sure he is raised with the love that he needs, mm-hmm. like she was. And then they can change things. He can grow up to be someone different and be in a stable environment and feel safe.
So she's going to be his mom.
I'm wondering if it's going to, if it will change things, if that's the way it's going to be.
We have never seen his parents, so that might be why.
Right. But I mean, Farouk, really, he still has to be stopped though from entering his mind, right?
Yeah. There's two prongs here. Well, there's three. There's Farouk being in there fucking with him. There's his family's history of mental illness, which could be a genetic component. And there's his nurturing, you know, how he's raised. So he's got all three of those. He can get rid of mm-hmm. the Farouk part and the potentially the, like, be reparented like Sid was. So I don't know about the genetic part, though.
Yeah. But I mean, maybe if he has the stability and the resources to, you know, get the help or whatever to like manage his illness. Yeah, he can, you know, at least not become someone who, you know, isn't. Because I think that if you eliminate Farouk and you give him a safe, loving environment and give him resources and the love that he needs, you know, to overcome and hopefully live and manage his mental illness, you know, he wouldn't become who he is today.
Assuming he even has it, just because it's in the family doesn't necessarily, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I feel like it's a, with all of his pretty legion, you know, that, I mean, it feels like he has some personalities.
I feel still like we don't even have a total handle on that either. Like, why was he hiding them from Professor X? Why not just say, yeah, look, this is my situation because of all this shit and I want to get rid of it, you know?
I don't know. I don't know if it was like a trust thing. Like, maybe he felt like his dad wouldn't trust him or think he was...
He wanted to seem really together.
Maybe. I think so.
I don't think he could control. I mean, like, some of those personalities were really twisted and antithetical to Charles being alive, you know? Yeah. Like, they wanted his blood. They were, and I think that David tried to lock them away because he knew he couldn't control them. The best he could do is muzzle them for a bit.
I didn't necessarily get that they would be violent towards him. I'm not saying no, but was it just because they were all just saying daddy? Did you just think that some of them?
Well, it's like when he said, we are here to get revenge against daddy. And then the guy's like, no, justice. Oh, right. Justice. Like, but like the look in his eye and just what he just, there was a lot of menace, you know, that like,
but that was against the Shadow King though, not Professor X.
He did call him out. He goes like, you're the one that abandoned us. He's like,
you say daddy
us.
The abandoner. Yeah. Like, I definitely could see him calling the Shadow King daddy too, but I think in this instance he was directly referring to Charles. So I can see you're saying that you thought that he was referring to the Shadow King as daddy.
No, I don't. I'm not even sure I do know that he said, we need to get revenge. No, it's justice. But I thought, I didn't realize that he said daddy in that part of it too, so I thought that he was talking about the Shadow King, but they definitely were resentful towards Charles the Abandoner,
right? Well, I have it pulled up. He says Charles looks at him and he's like, David, because he comes through the door and he says, daddy, is that you, David? Nope. Sorry, David isn't here right now. He had to go someplace quiet. We're in charge now. You know what we have to do. He said no. He says, revenge. No, justice. Right, justice. We're here for justice. Right. And he says, because you couldn't protect us.
So that's about the Shadow King, I think. Oh, yeah,
He says, you couldn't protect us. He calls him the Leaver, the great abandoner who put a monster in our head and then threw us away. Adoption, betrayal. I think that's, I don't know that he's aggressive to him, but he's definitely the one, the outspoken, I guess, personality that's, you know, has the Big Daddy issues, I guess.
Yeah, so it seems like they came into the head of steam about the Shadow King, but then they started talking themselves into. I just felt like that towards the end that Charles definitely felt threatened because he did the mental repulsion and escape from the head.
But to me, the vibe that they were giving off was more like desperate to fill this void, like they were suffocating him, Daddy, 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 almost like the cult members do with David when they crowd around and he just wants to push him off, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the look on Charles's face as all the different Davids started coming through the doors, and he's just like, oh gosh, he's got some problems.
He's like, I wasn't ready for one kid, and now I've got 30.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to our next one. Aaron, number 3.
I want to kind of like continue to pivot along some of the stuff that Remo's talking about there and talk about the philosophy of Sid's, like, or moral and ethical framework for going back and fixing time, because it seems to me that when the show was portraying David as going back to his childhood to try to shield him from the influence of the Shadow King, that was interpreted by all as an immoral action, right?
I guess so, but it seems really hypocritical to me.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I'm wondering if like this is literally some kind of consent thing, where like if Sid is on board with the idea of going back to save David, then it's okay. Or is it like is it her selflessness in the act? Because we know that if they pull this off, and I'm surprised no one, like one of the Carries, didn't call her out, but if they pull this off, it stands to reason that they'll stop existing, or at least in the forms that they were. So we're still talking about like some kind of, you know, genocide of a particular type of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And it's like, is that okay just because their motives are pure? David's motives were selfish?
I mean, another aspect might also be that since David is focused on the Shadow King, they feel like he's not taking responsibility, that he's a victim blaming someone else, where she's like into this whole reparenting thing where it's working on him versus some outside influence. But I don't know.
But she's still like talking about like, you know, like keep him safe from the monsters.
Yes.
And yeah, I mean, but that kind of gets, I guess, to the core of what are they trying to do? I'm surprised the Carries didn't have an opinion on it. And also that I'm not sure I buy the equivalence, because Sid wasn't really raised a whole second childhood, right? Like that's essentially... I don't know, maybe it is, but it seemed like it was analogous to like some kind of form of like really intense talk therapy, you know, like regression therapy, right? So like, why couldn't we just do that with David? Why do we have to go back and if that's the answer,
right?
Couldn't we like put him in stasis field, get Oliver out of the freezing tank, have him and Melanie raise him in the astral plane in 20 minutes, and then see how it goes?
Yeah, I can start charging like. You know, I'd pay $10,000 for that.
Yeah, why not?
As I was watching this episode a lot, it's like a lot of these really cool ideas that they've established in this season, and they've all been really cool. They're starting to feel like they're kind of grinding.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like how I felt about the latest Star Wars movie. It's like, you know, when they hyperspace to start, you know, one ship into another, and it was like this ultimate beatable weapon. I'm like, well, shit, now every space battle has to do this, or... You know, like you can't develop the super weapon and then say, oh, it's only so like, I don't know why they couldn't just do that. Why everything has to be this apocalyptic and
right. It's kind of what Walking Dead does a lot, where they'll go with what they think is most cool dramatically or interesting or whatever, but doesn't logically make sense. I think this is one of those cases, because they might not want to repeat themselves. Then again, maybe we will see that next week. I kind of doubt it, but it's not a 0% chance.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think it would be really cool, because I say all this just to set like some stakes in my mind. I think it'd be really cool if they actually, that's part of what they're saying, that like, you can't go back and change the past and make things better for yourself or for anyone. Like, you can't go back and save them from themselves, right? The only thing you can do is start putting one foot in front of the other, like, in here and now. Right. Like moving forward. And that's a kind of, like... I actually would like that message. I think that would be a really cool message for the show to solve, because the other thing is literally fantasy thinking. And if it brings it back to, like, this being a meditation on mental illness, man, that's about the best advice you can give somebody. Like, stop looking back in the past, focus on directing your steps better in the here and now.
I know. And they, Sid already said the opposite of that this episode. She was telling, I think, Gabrielle, it's too late for him now. But as a baby, or maybe she's telling Carrie that when they were having the whole would you kill baby Hitler debate. But so that was kind of the opposite of what you're saying. And I agree with you.
But it's kind of cool, because I can see also, if you think about this in terms of last week's episode too, that, like, it could be that she's just wrong, that, like, she thinks this is the one lesson, but what she's really what lesson really applies here is the lesson of, like, letting go, or, you know, you try to help somebody if they're but I don't know how that applies to a, you know, a mutant that's as powerful as David, but
that you have to do something about, or the world's gonna die.
Yeah. It's like, it's you know, it's one thing if it's your sister who's hooked on, you know, has a drug addiction, and, you know, she keeps on self-destructing, and you try to get him help, like, you know, it's one thing to be like, well, I don't know, it's like I have thoughts and prayers for her, and I'm always going to love her, but I can't fix her. If she could explode the world of her mind, it's a little bit, you know, it's even higher stakes. So,
but I mean,
not that it... family member addicted to drugs isn't already absurdly high stakes,
but David has to, like, want to, like, they can't, I feel like they've, or at least Sydney has tried reaching out to him and talking to him, and she's kind of established that he is too far gone. Like, David doesn't believe that he really needs to be fixed, and if people don't recognize that they have a problem, they're not going to be willing to say, oh yeah, you know what, that'd be good, just put me in an ice box and send me to the astral plane, let, you know, them raise me as a baby, and we can do it that way, like Sid was. I mean, he has to want to do it, and I don't think he thinks that that's the solution, because he doesn't think that there's, you know, he doesn't know about that yet, I guess, if that's, you know, he doesn't know what Sid has been through, so he doesn't know that, I guess, can even happen or has even thought about that, but he's so set, I think, on, you know, he has to go back and change the past, that, you know, he has to be a willing participant in that, and I think that's, you know, part of it. And I don't think that Sid is 100% convinced that if she stays and raises David like she was raised in her second childhood, that that will save the world or even save David. But that's her way of trying. You know, she says when Carrie's like, well, he could still grow up and, you know, be that person. She's like, yeah, maybe. But it's like, you know, I have to try. You can't save everyone, but I have to try. And I think that she thinks that this is at least our shot at trying. It may not work, but it's what I have to do. So I don't know that she's even 100% convinced.
In that case, maybe they should kill the baby. It's high stakes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you have any more on that one?
No, I think that covers it.
Okay. I wanted to talk a little bit about David's parenting. We've already covered a little bit of it, but I noticed, you know, like I said, this show's about the impact of parentage and what you take on from your parenting. And whenever Shadow King Farouk said, you know, I was like a daddy to you or whatever, I was like, no, come on. There's no truth to that whatsoever. But now I'm starting to feel like, oh yeah, it is kind of true in that way, that sometimes you take on the characteristics of your parents or the people who were around when you were little. And David is manifesting similar situations in his life to what the Shadow King did. The Shadow King has all of these people surrounding him, showering him with adulation, and David's got this cult, and it's kind of similar. And you know, Shadow King is a total narcissist who will use and destroy the people around him, thinking of them all as objects. And here's David with Switch stumbling in, all hurting and broken, and Charles says, who's this girl? And he's, oh, she's no one. She's a means of getting here, a tool. And that, you know, it just feels like maybe he picked some of that up from Farouk. Because Farouk
was
there.
Yeah, that was chilling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
it's also like the first sign to Charles that something here is not all right.
Yeah, it's a big sign. And, you know, before David was sort of qualifying all of that with, well, I'm going to change time, so all of this, whatever bad happens here will be undone. But he wasn't even saying that this time. That kind of sucked. And, you know, even with her, I mean, I'm really like liking him less and less. I still have a place in my heart for David, but the way that he told her, I think last week or the week before, I'm going to make sure you don't lose any more teeth, or you're not going to lose any more teeth. And here she is losing more teeth. And that was just bullshit. And I hate when people bullshit like that.
So. Yeah. And it's just also just, I just need one more thing. Yeah, one more thing. Like, he's so clearly a user.
Milking
her
dry.
That's the other thing. The way the style is telling, the show is telling the story in a visual style. It's not clear to me whether when they show the time skipping, whether they're suggesting that they have tried this multiple times, like the David thinks it's the first time he's tried it, but it's actually multiple times. Or if it's just a sign of the time fracturing to where
I think
it's just like skipping and doing.
I think that's what I thought too.
Yeah.
The time meters are, the time is fraying. And I mean, who knows, but that's what I thought. And I also, though, there were some things that happened with Professor X where he would just suddenly appear like in bed, or when he first got to Farouk's palace and his driver suddenly was there to welcome him at the door. And I was sort of wondering if that was just Farouk kind of fucking with him to put him off guard. I couldn't tell if that was like one of the time things or if that was Farouk or what.
It could also be Farouk, because we also know he's traveling through an oil painting to get out of the never ever, the dimension of the endless now or whatever they called it. So it's like there's all kinds of chronological forces at play now that you mention it. So yeah, I guess it could be there's all kinds of things that could be causing it.
Well, and it's interesting that they didn't even notice it at first. Like, it was happening with Sid and Carrie in their timeline that they're in, and it was happening with David and Charles, and it was happening at first and no one was realizing it, when it happened in the I don't remember the episode, but whenever we were introduced like to the time demons and they started messing with time, they noticed it, like, wait a minute, you know, how did, you know, or at least somebody noticed it, and they weren't even noticing it at first.
Yeah,
so it was kind of weird how they didn't pick up on it until almost the end.
Maybe this would be a good time for us to just kind of like talk some things out, because there's a couple of things that I wanted to, like, I'm not even going to say that they're mistakes or whatnot, it's just like I didn't understand it. For example, like Farouk coming through the painting, I actually was fine with that. I don't know if you guys had a paint, because like, to me, okay, well, he's got to get out of this thing and it's got to be some kind of psychic, telepathic mumbo jumbo. So showing him struggle out of an oil painting, why not? It's not something they'd established, but it's cool because how else do you visualize it? But kind of in the line of like Sid killing a time demon with a hammer, how did Sid and the Carries follow them through that time corridor with what we saw happened, with the fact that it like massively got destabilized, David got cut off from the very talented time traveler that was making all this possible? How in the hell did Sid follow them through all that?
And not only did they follow and we didn't see them have any trouble, but they ended up with Gabrielle, where David ended up in Morocco. And so why would they? She didn't even know that Gabrielle was David's mother at first, because she was caught off guard when Gabrielle said, oh, baby, David.
Right.
So that, yeah, I feel like that's a hole. Like, I'm like, how did they get here? How'd that happen?
Yeah, and the second time I watched it, the dialogue she had with her mother, it seemed clear to me that she knew what they were there and why, you know, like, you know, it's essentially to fix David as a baby. But then she also was shocked that this was actually David. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because the first time I watched it last night, I thought that was an issue. And then the second time I watched it through, I'm like, nope. There's like weird kind of will they, won't they, as far as her relationship to realizing David is a baby and that David's there. It's kind of strange. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I just want to see if I missed something or...
I don't know. The only indication, which was confusing to me too, whenever Carrie looks at Sid when they're kind of there in the yard and she says, so David's here, and Sidney says he should be, we followed them.
Yeah. It's like, well, they're not here.
Right. And who
is
did
it
you
possible
follow?
That they followed a previous iteration of David and Switch? Because, you know, they've done this trip back to...
That's true.
Because the other thing is David and Switch didn't go to that exact location in space. They went to the exact location, same location in time. Right, but, like, yeah. You know, he went to Morocco and everybody else went to England. That probably is different.
Yeah.
But so maybe that she followed a previous iteration of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can say that. I just feel like the writers wanted them to end up there and kind of hand-waved it away, which is unfortunate because I don't often feel like that with a show. But maybe we could be missing something. I don't know. As far as the painting goes, I think I actually feel like the time eaters helped Farouk get out in that particular place because they want him to fight David and Professor X.
Right.
They also had the subtitled painting montage where it's like, you know, he's trapped in here unless, and then it showed an egg.
Yeah,
are they suggesting that he like took over the time demon's minds? Like with his like patented delusion technology,
maybe
because then that would make a lot of sense if he has deputized the time demons and now they're swarming and looking like they're a lot more organized than they were before. I don't know, because that's the other thing is I didn't understand what they were doing as far as eating David's house and you know.
Yeah, it could be that. Yeah, I was thinking that they were using him, but you could be right that he's using them.
Oh, well, gosh, now I am so confused.
Because also, while we're talking things through, there's that really interesting scene where as Dave is getting kind of hijacked by the time fracture, Farouk appears to him and says, oh, you silly boy, don't you know that, I don't know, that reality is what you make it, is what you can will.
Yeah.
And then David kind of like grabs his head and stabilizes time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's super clear that Farouk is still pulling everyone's strings,
You know, I thought it was a flashback, and it goes along with the point I was just making of parentage.
Of him being his father.
He actually pulled something useful from that, and maybe he was thinking back about it or something.
Right, because that was in season two when, you know, he's... You know, because Farouk's always kind of, he's messed with him, but he has in some ways tried to demonstrate some type of father figure, parental, you know, advice to him. And he's like, you know, and that's when he tells him, he's like, you're a god, you make your own reality. And I feel like that's when he kind of drew back from that and realized that he wasn't trapped in time and he could make it what he wanted and kind of started to fully realize
took strength
his
from
powers.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. One more thing that kind of relates to this point about his parenting and how, you know, he had more, probably Shadow King was more of a parent to him than Professor X. And this whole thing about Sid having been reparented by Oliver and Melanie, and she says, I had two childhoods. The first time I ran and then I walked. The second I crawled and then I walked, I felt safe. That's all he wants, to feel safe. And there's this whole lesson about how, you know, if you're parented in that way, then you'll be healthier. But what maybe contradicts that, and it's from one of our favorite episodes, season 2, episode 4, where Sid imparts this lesson, the world breaks everyone and afterwards some are strong at the broken places. And that's almost like the opposite. And I was actually just listening to Mark Maron's WTF with Sean Lennon, and they're talking about how creative people often had a lot of pain or challenge in their lives and they had to work through it. And so they got wiser and more resilient. And also how being creative can mean living in this space of unknown or discovery, and it feels less safe and secure, but you get used to the chaos of it. So it's not necessarily comfortable, but they said my comfort zone is not comfortable. And so anyway, my whole point is that maybe there's actually something to not having this perfect safe space when you're younger, that you have to overcome some things and that builds some strength that can be useful in the world. So I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, that was a pretty clear lesson in season two, that whole thing about the world breaks everyone and afterwards some are stronger at the broken places. So I feel like that's antithetical to this whole thing we've been getting lately.
Yeah. Although I guess Sid got she got the best of both worlds,
right?
Sid
got both.
She got the hard knocks life and then she got the the what's the opposite of Hard Knock? The soft
hug.
Shut. I don't know. Soft hug life. Yeah.
Exactly, and she has memories of both. It's not like
she's
one.
She's all about that hug life.
It's not like that one.
T-shirts are coming. Okay, Rima.
Yeah.
What's your number two?
Well, it's kind of short and sweet, and we've kind of touched on it a little bit, and just kind of trying to figure out the time demons and what their motives were in this episode. Because I get the feeling that they were trying to eliminate David, either as a baby or even present David while he's with his father and old Farouk, or past day Farouk. Because he's a threat, and that he was able to defeat them, and that's because I'm of the mind that they helped release Farouk from the painting, because it seemed like they cracked it like it was glass, like they were able to fracture the line between where he was and then, like you said, Never Never, whatever you want to call that place, and that time, and that he was, you know, they were helping him to escape, but then they were also chasing baby David, and I mean that looked pretty ominous that they were specifically targeting him, you know, kind of breaking the house down in parts and leaving it open and vulnerable and then hovering over David's crib that way. And then that's of course when Sid comes in with her magic time hammer and is able to eliminate him. But are you guys of that frame of mind too? Am I way off base? Would like to at least get your thoughts and what you guys thought about that as far as with the time demons' role and why they were back.
I actually think I like your take better than my take. My take was this: they were eating like as they do. Sometimes they eat objects. They eat time and things, history, and they were doing that. And it's also like a tension building device. Like I just saw it as that. It's kind of like you're playing striptease and you lose a round and you take off a button on your shirt. Like, oh, we're gonna really draw this out, and like the time demon should just go right for the baby, right? But no, we're gonna take the clock and then the picture and then the stuffed animal and then the other stuffed animal and then the walls and then like, oh, okay. So like you actually put a little bit more thought and effort into like, oh, they're taking, stripping away his protection, his familiarity, and making him feel vulnerable. That's actually probably what Holly was hoping for, instead of me just being like, I see what you're doing there.
I mean, I don't know. That's the only thing I could come away with it. But I just feel like the point was raised, well, maybe Farouk was using the time demons, that he's using them to push David where he wants him. And that he, you know, that Farouk has been this whole mastermind behind this whole thing in this entire time that he's been driving David to this point, you know, to get Charles there, to have David there, and to have all of this happen. And so I don't know. I feel like there's no straight line to any of that, that at least at this point I feel. So I was just kind of
confused. To me, it seems like they like to fuck with people and they laugh at it and they like to throw people off. And I don't know, man, that baby was just, he's too little to really be thrown off by much, you know, unless he's hungry or needs a diaper change. So, but still, they're kind of playful in a sadistic way with their time-eating powers, and it just seemed like it went right along with that. I don't necessarily think they have this, like, oh, we really have to urgently get our enemies. It's more like, hey, let's cause chaos.
But you don't think that it's, you know, that they were maybe targeting David because of the threat of that episode when he was able to defeat them and was like, you know, hey, tell your friends, I'll come after you guys, and that really freaked him out, thinking, oh hell, we actually have somebody out there that that can eliminate us. Or
I mean, also when I get to a situation like this, I start thinking about it from the creative point of view, and it's like, well, we could have them go in and kill him, but then the show would be over. So what are we going to do?
Of course. And I realize it kind of opens up a whole new kind of side storyline or something when here we are at the end of the show. And why would we kind of open this up? But I'm just trying to kind of figure out. It just seemed, you know, like they were helping from both ends, or trying to target at both ends. And that's just, I mean, it's the only way I could make it sense for me.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Like it could be, you know, like Jason said, they're targeting him because he's a uniquely dangerous person. He had uniquely kicked their ass and they're scared of him. It could be that Farouk is putting him up to it. It could be that David is doing actual violence to the timeline and they're kind of the guardians of time and they've got it into him. Like, there's a lot of reasons they could have it in for David.
Mm-hmm.
But it does, yeah, it doesn't feel like it's like a random and undirected. Mm-hmm. It felt like it was kind of centered on him.
I mean, I think it's been established that when Switch uses her powers, that creates weaknesses in the barriers between wherever they're from and getting out of there. And then they get to come out and eat time. And they're just right. really giddy about that, it seems like. So I don't think yeah. they're guarding anything. I think they're destructive.
That's true. And yeah, I could be completely way off base because it is true when Switch was telling David, you know, way back, like the further back that we go, we risk releasing these time demons yeah. and how they like to come in and stir stuff up, you know, and just cause chaos. You know, that makes sense too.
But it does make sense that they would want to get him out of the way because he's shown to be one that can, you know, is powerful over them.
Right. Anyway, sure. That's my number two.
Okay. Aaron?
This show has been doing horror really well this season, mm-hmm. and some of that stuff involving Farouk's court of children is just as chilling as anything. I mean, it's like a self-contained Tales from the Dark Side episode, right? Like,
yes.
I don't know who this king is and how tyrannical he was, but banishing the king's consciousness to a monkey and then banishing the rest of the consciousness of his retinue to these children's minds, and then like the children were tormenting the monkey, and is that because they're tormented themselves? That's some fucked up
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, it's messed up.
I thought, and it's Harry Lloyd or is it Henry Lloyd?
Yep, Harry Lloyd,
Professor X.
Yep.
I thought he did really good work at kind of like working that kind of revulsion, and you know, you'd see like Charles put his head to his temple and then he'd see this and it's like, oh, he did a really good job of showing what I usually consider a very powerful and in control character completely like adrift in this situation's morality, its reality. I liked it and it was really creepy. And between this and the time demons, they've done some A+. The American Horror Story should be ashamed for what they're going to try to roll out with this Friday the 13th season after seeing what FX is doing.
Yep.
yeah, it's pretty chilling. And I think even when Professor X discovered that this little girl has all the souls of Shadow King's former enemies trapped in her head and it's making her miserable, that was pretty chilling. And then that's what convinced him. Okay. I know David's a little sketchy, but I think Shadow King's a monster and we need to get rid of him. So that was mm-hmm. a good little sequence
right.
there.
Well, and how Farouk is even playing it off, because before Charles even discovers what's happening, he's thinking, oh, well, how good of you to take in these orphan children, you know, into your home and care for them, give them a home and feeding them and stuff. And he's like, you know, oh, he's like, no, it's not noble, it's decent. And how, you know, he sees it, you know, what he's doing, and then to, you know, when he discovers the truth, and that kind of makes it even more horrific.
But he's a little, yeah, he's unsure throughout the whole thing. Like, somebody shows up with a painting of him, and Professor X didn't even think Shadow King knew about him. And then Shadow King gradually, casually drops that he knows he has a baby and a wife, and oh, you know, like all about me, and oh, yes, of course. And it's like a little sketchy the whole time.
Right. But he's still naive, he's young still Charles, like, you know, yeah, he's yeah, naive yeah. and open.
He's open to possibly, even with David's telling him, you know, oh, this guy, he lets him eat the knowledge cake, which I love. I wish I had a piece of that to feed to people sometimes. he's still like, maybe we can talk to him. And no, and then after the thing with the girl, he realizes, no, we can't talk to him. But that leads into my number two, which is about Farouk. And in season 2, episode 3, Farouk said to David, For decades, I rule over my country. I'm a good king, strong but just. My people, they prosper. And then your father, a white man, which is, you tell me, important. He comes. Does he speak our language? Does he know our customs? And he decides what? That my people should have better? That he knows better? Who is he to make such choices? And so there was the sort of temptation there to think, oh, maybe we're seeing things from David's point of view, but actually Farouk has a point here. So now can we definitively say that all of that's bullshit?
I mean, it's not a referendum on anti-colonialism, but it does seem like a referendum on this particular take on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not saying in general. I'm just saying
white men bear no guilt for the state of the planet.
We've decided.
No, anyone that would suggest that is insane.
That is not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying you know what I'm saying, but he's using that as a way to cover for a cover for himself.
Totally. It's a great cover story. It's a great cover story. Right. Yeah.
And then we have the story of how he became king, done with the shadow play, which is great. They call me the Shadow King. I'm like, yeah, nice little origin story, maybe. I mean, he operates in the shadows too, so there's multiple levels to that name. But anyway, it says, once upon a time, a tyrant ruled the land. He basked in indulgences and his kingdom starved. But then from the lowliest of stations, a hero arose with nothing but his wits. And we see him kill people with a sword. And he goes, and a magic phrase. He fought that beastly ruler. And the magic phrase was, you should never have come. He vanquished the tyrant. He took his riches and his kingdom and set into motion an age of prosperity, praised by all. And it seems like that's all also bullshit. The Monkey King seems, just based on what little we hear from him, he's very tyranty seeming too. So maybe he was another autocrat, but Shadow King just came in and took over and is doing probably the exact same thing.
Well, and also, I mean, this is kind of my number one. So I'll throw in a couple cents in here too. Like I really loved this portrayal of Farouk. And what a different kind of like more animated, little slightly goofier, much less suave, obviously, but more kind of like honest and I don't know, animated is a good word. I just
a little
loved
less
it
self-possessed, a little.
Yeah. And he read as almost visually younger. And his, you know, he's a little bit more of a goofy guy. I thought he was more of a comedic presence, but he also connects that like this thing. Of mental illness, that he's like, you know, I walked the streets, I thought I was mad. And there's a lot of ways you can, and he's always just ranting and raving, and there's ways you can interpret that. Number one, maybe he's just a powerful telepath with poor control of their abilities. We've seen this through most recently Jean Grey, what a traumatic experience it can be to like just have people's thoughts intruding on you all the time. But it also could be that he's got, you know, some baseline mental illness on top of that. And I thought that was kind of an interesting possibility. So it's possible this guy is a tyrant and was cruel to his people, and Farouk, through a combination of, you know, just his own natural power and kind of maybe having to screw loose himself, decided to, you know, do justice to the world. But you can also see how, you know, this power, like the more you use it, it's like Charles X, you know, the more you use it indiscriminately to kind of like benefit yourself, the easier it is until you become a monster, mm-hmm. that you use children's minds to imprison your enemies and you take over a baby's life so you can have a more powerful host, and you destroy a family just, you know, to maneuver the father in a place where you could. I think it's very interesting, and I loved how this guy found a new way to play this character, but just as like intelligent and menacing, but almost a completely emotional like tonality and temperature, 180.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think my sense is the question is not whether he's a monster now when Professor X meets him. He really seems like it. But the question, according to what you're saying, is more, was he, when he came into that situation, already a monster, or did the whole, did he become it as he, you know, ruled the place?
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
It's just amazing, like from that perspective, like how in the world did Professor Xavier not you know, I think, did I say this earlier in the season? Like, is Professor Xavier like Jesus Christ? Is he like, is he just a perfect man? Because how can anyone with that much power over other people not succumb to its influence?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, the only, I do wonder, like you alluded to before, if he's so great, then why did he not parent David? That's the one thing that I wonder. And hopefully,
yeah,
we'll
that's
find
one thing
that
I.
Out.
I think that's, yeah, you know, I think that's, the show will deliver a pretty satisfying answer to that. Yeah. It feels like that's what all this
where
is building up to.
Towards, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, yeah, I think, yeah, you can kind of figure out, like, like we were talking, Gabrielle's not capable of parenting. I don't even know if she'd be capable, even if she had Charles with her all the time, and capable of being,
yeah,
a mom that he needs. So I think clearly we understand what would happen with her, but why is it that Charles can't seem to pick up, you know, if, mm-hmm, if she falls into descent into her illness, and is unable to parent, why can't Charles be there?
Another question I have is, you know, is all of this what happened no matter what? Because we never saw, like, say, some original version of the fight between Farouk and Professor X, except for what English David wrote on the chalkboard in, mm-hmm, David's head. Mm-hmm. So maybe this was, you know, time works in the way that there's really only one way that it happened, and this was it, and everything's inevitable. I forget why that relates to what we were just talking about. It's so hard to talk about the show and skip around. One more thing I want to
breaking my brain
yes,
to mention about this point. So Charles comes and Farouk is expecting him, but you know, he was not expecting David. So what do you think Charles' plan, I mean Farouk's plan for Charles was?
You know, it's like, I forget which philosopher this is, but there's like this concept of like the other, and how like you can't see yourself. Like if you were just a single person on this earth, you wouldn't even understand what it meant to be human in a way that you could instantly grasp if you saw another human.
Hmm.
And there's a lot of the dialogue of Farouk kind of like, you know, you saw me and I saw you, like,
yeah,
and there's a genuine delight. Like, I think that this was, there's in Farouk, I don't think he had an agenda except for Charles has a very powerful son that I can jack for, like, that was always his agenda. But I think there's also kind of like, you know, he wanted to genuinely meet somebody like him, someone that might be either an ally or a challenge or a rival.
Yeah, I think he would either want to use him, or if that failed, then destroy him.
Right.
I think, but he wanted to, like, feel him out, really. I mean,
yeah,
kind of,
yeah,
like,
to see whether he could use, yeah, him or needed to destroy him.
Yeah, is he a threat, you know, to me? Because Charles is a power. I know he's not. Charles isn't an Omega mutant, right? Like Farouk and David.
Well,
I mean, I know he's really powerful.
He definitely is later, but I don't know about right now. Because even it was interesting to see David has much more facility with his powers, I think, than Charles at this point.
Yeah. I don't know. I was just curious. But yeah, I don't know if it was just like to feel it out, take his measure, you know, in, mm-hmm, person instead of from afar when he kind of picked up his presence.
The other part of that, like, the philosophy of the other is, like, you get, like, an enhanced understanding of yourself, but it's also, like, this fear, you know, that, like, you know, when you're alone, you kind of are secure in your supremacy, right? There's nothing that can challenge you, but then when another steps onto the scene, suddenly it's like, oh, this is something that I can't control and I can't intuitively understand by reading their mind. And so it's like he wanted maybe friendship, but then when Charles got there, like, he realized what a threat he was. But I don't know, that's some highfalutin bullshit. Mm-hmm. I think that, well, like, the real story is when he's telling the story of the Shadow King and he looks right at Xavier's like, you should not have come. Mm-hmm. Like,
right,
he feels,
yep,
like a spider, yeah, that a fly has just landed on his web. Exactly. And there's nothing the fly can do about,
yes,
it.
Yeah,
I think,
because
that's key.
One story I was just concocting in my head is, oh, maybe he was sincere in that it's wonderful to be seen and to see it's a gift or whatever, which I agree, I love that. But then, you know, David coming actually made it so that they needed to fight. But what you just said kind of negated that, because he was already being kind of menacing, and Charles had that premonition. And I think that might have been the first time I call him the fat bastard, spoke. I don't know for sure, but he said, you should never have come.
Yeah, and I really like David kind of spectrally appearing to his father and saying, "Behold the King of Lies." That was a really cool scene.
Yes. Super cool.
So saying, like, grinning Farouk and, like, spectral David are a reason enough to watch this show. Even
no
if you have
kidding.
Problems, like I understand it, but, like, there's just some, just, man, what great character.
Yeah, And I love how David just starts talking to him as if he was just, you know, a friend who was always there, not like some stranger who just appeared as a ghost next to him. I don't believe him. Okay, we are at number one.
Gosh. Well, I just want to kind of talk a little bit, and we've already kind of broke it down quite a lot, so I don't know how much more I can add to it, but just the whole David finally meeting his father face to face. I like how he feeds him that piece of cake. Jason, you already mentioned that, calling it knowledge, and basically catches Charles up on season one and season two of Legion.
I want to eat an American's cake and pick a dozen shows that are on my list.
I think that would be a lot more fun than the Matrix upload if you had like the capability in the Matrix where you can just do an upload of like, oh, now I know Kung Fu, or now I've just watched a whole series of this show and I'm good to go. I would enjoy a nice piece of red velvet cake, and I would definitely enjoy that. I think more.
What if they combine that with the orgasm cake from the Matrix Part 2? Now you've got a product.
Somebody get on that right away. When Charles told David that everyone is someone, like when David just dismissed Switch, when he's like, well, who is she? And he's like, she was just a means to get here. And he kind of reprimanded him in like a fatherly role. He's like, everybody is somebody, David.
David's like, oh, Dad.
Yeah, I'm like, that's the kind of parenting he's needed, and he hasn't had it, and that's why we're here. Yeah. That's why we're in season three of this show, because you weren't there to teach him empathy, and that it's, you know, not all about him, that people matter too. I like that it looks like, according to the end anyway, that we're going to have a bit of a showdown with Legion versus the Shadow King, and...
Squared.
Yeah, squared. it made me wonder if... Do you guys remember in season two when Oliver and Farouk were traveling? I don't think it was a desert, but they were in that rickshaw, or maybe they were in the car. Sorry, that was when Oliver was driving, maybe. But I know they were traveling. I guess it was when they were going to go find Amy. And Oliver said that he was going to kill. He would be the one to kill Farouk, and he told Farouk that 1 + 1 does not equal 2. And it made me think that. David plus Charles doesn't equal 2, because you have David, Charles, and Legion, which is many. I don't know. But, I mean, I know it's a bit of a stretch, but it just kind of made me think, well, because Legion is many, and, you know, because...
I will subscribe to your newsletter, Rima.
Thanks.
I'm buying. I'm buying.
You can subscribe for $1.99. No. but I don't know, because Oliver did say he would be the one to kill Farouk, and I don't know that we're going to, because we did not get any really kind of any preview for next week at all. It was all like clips from the season thrown in there, which I thought was, you know, hey, we're not going to give you anything for next week at all. So I just love that whole, you know, all of the scenes with David and his father. I liked all of the interactions with David and Farouk when David, you know, comes in. He's like, oh, I'm always here for a free meal. And when Farouk tries to read his mind and David keeps playing that song.
The cult song.
Yeah. Captain, yeah. What? You know?
all you can see in his mind is just like this crazy hippie drug party.
Exactly.
It's like, and it's unsettling to him,
yeah.
Right?
Because that's a psychic trick, right?
And he can't admit what he's trying to do. Like, he can't say, what's going on with you? Because then that would be admitting that he's trying to pry into his mind.
Exactly.
But I felt like there's a little hole there, because he should have then read or tried to read Charles's mind to find out about David.
That's not a walk in the park either.
That's true.
Yeah.
True. But anyway, I don't know. I loved all of that. I loved all the interactions. There were some really fun things. And watching Naveed Negabon, who plays Farouk, going from super charming, you know, because like you said, Aaron, there was a very different Farouk than, you know, which I've always thought he was charming. He's always, I mean, he's a villain, and I think he's been up to no good and never doubted that he was a bad guy, a real bad guy in this in this series, even though the good guy bad guy thing is kind of ambiguous. But I feel like he's always been a bad guy, but he's been a fun, charming villain to have around, and he's never been boring. And I think this was definitely a new side to Farouk that we hadn't seen before, so that was really fun. He played it so well, and I really, really got a kick out of that.
Yeah, his face lighting up and saying when he sees himself and says, interesting, man. And I don't blame him for not wanting to show anything for next week, because my expectations are sky high. Like,
I know.
First season one, we had the chalkboard battle between Professor X and the Shadow King. Season two, we had the behind blue eyes psychic battle between Legion and or David and the Shadow King. And now we're going to get Legion and Professor X versus Shadow King times two. The level of visual spectacle I'm expecting is pretty high. They have conditioned me to expect a very high degree of crazy visuals to go along with this off the chart psychic battle.
And music too.
But if it is David's face for just an hour, you already said it would still be okay.
It's true. That's
David's
true.
Face
That's
and true. Someone in the background going, David.
No, it'll just honestly, 59 minutes of David's face dissolving into Farouk's face every 5 minutes. It just takes 5 minutes to complete the entire circle. That I could almost see that being it.
Yeah.
5 minutes of denouement.
I'd take that. I'm in.
Okay, what's your number one?
It was the just how cool Farouk was. I think feel like we're all dogpiling on that thing.
Okay. Yeah, I already did my number one, so why don't we go into notes?
Great visuals when they were showing that play, which we already talked about, how Farouk came into power. Thought that was, again, an interesting and creative way to kind of show that from his perspective. The line, you should never have come, that kept getting repeated throughout this episode. Mm-hmm. Thought that was kind of means a lot.
On the train, he has this vision, or whatever it was, of evil fat Shadow King saying it to him. Then when he's doing his shadow play, he's saying it to the tyrant in the play, but it looks like he's also saying it directly to Professor X again. And then David says it to Shadow King.
Right.
And it was interesting to me, this is one of my notes actually, Shadow King's trying to read David's mind, and David projects, you should never have come. And then we see Switch stumbling around and a tooth falling at her feet, and I'm like, she should have never come to David. And then just as David's all excited telling Charles, we have him rattled, I knew it, I'm the unexpected element, then Switch stumbles in and she's like the unexpected element that rattles David right in front of Charles. So it's all these like role reversal things going on.
The last note that I had was just like one of the saddest things I think I've probably ever heard. And that was when Sydney was talking to Gabrielle when they're in the yard and Sydney was chopping wood. And Sydney asks Gabrielle, she says, is he a good baby, David? And she said, and Gabrielle says, well, he cries a lot, like he knows something. And Sydney says, what could he know? And she looks at her and says, me. I thought that was just one of the saddest damn things I've ever heard in my life. And I didn't have it in my notes, but it again, I kept thinking of Sid and this damn lost arm of hers that maybe won't happen now. I don't know, but I feel like they keep showing us the arm with the time watch on it, and an axe is always present. I don't know. I don't know what's going
to
happen.
No, you're wise to be on guard. There's no way that doesn't pay off.
I mean, I feel like it's just, it has to happen. We've seen it too much, and I feel like they keep throwing these things in our faces. So I don't know. I guess we only have next episode to see what comes to fruition there.
Yeah, and all the great hero's journey, which Sid is obviously on, the hero has to pay a great price. You know, Frodo couldn't go back to the Shire, and her losing an arm and potentially the love of her life, I think, is going to be the price that she pays. Mm. Hopefully, we'll go further than that. I'm really, really pulling for her. We did see her in the future.
Yep, that's true. So, and then we haven't talked about Switch a lot. She's not really in my notes, but I feel bad we kind of didn't really talk about her too much. She does not look to be in good shape at all. Looks like she is dying, and I feel terrible for her.
I was trying to figure her out a little bit because she says, "I'm here, teacher," as she's collapsing before him with blood coming out. And at some point she says, "Daddy, I need you. I'm scared." I don't know if she's talking about her own father or David.
I thought that was interesting, her call, because they've established what a distant figure that he is from her.
Well, I just think that the whole thing of all his acolytes calling him daddy is some kind of psychological thing playing out for them and for him. For him, it maybe it's that he, you know, didn't have a father figure, and now he's taking on that role, but it's in a way that's narcissistic. Like, he sees them all as objects. And then they're all, maybe they didn't have father figures either. And so they're unconsciously seeking out this similar relationship where this person that's supposed to protect them, but isn't really, because he's not really very protective of them. I don't think I explained that very well, but it's just like people looking to fulfill these voids in their lives. And I think she falls right into it, you know? Switch.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I thought that, I thought it's interesting about her, you know, that father figure, is that I always thought that she was a little stronger than the average, like, acolyte, kind of like she would maintain her sense of individuality kind of similar to the way Lenny did, but maybe not. Maybe this is just inevitable if you spend this much time around David and he bends all of his will and his focus on you, that, like, no matter how you started off with or how strong you start off with, he's going to, like, break you down into this childlike figure that needs his daddy. Mm-hmm.
I mean, what we've seen of her is, you know, the very first episode where she was introduced, there was attention put on the fact that her father's at the end of this long table on TV and just asked her about her schooling and then leaves. So he kind of treats her. And then I think she's complaining that he treats her like a robot or something. So it definitely seems like he's not connected to her at all, that he's just absent and distant. And then she goes and answers this time travel ad and seems almost completely loyal to David throughout the series, except maybe when Carrie takes her away. But other than that, so I didn't feel it, but just looking at the logistics of what we've seen, it seems like she's just, you know, a typical person who's feels like there's something missing in their life and goes and joins a cult.
Yep.
I think you could make that case anyway.
Sure. Well, that was all my notes.
Aaron?
Kind of going on the strong line readings we were talking about, I really like David when he, right before he went catatonic and he said, "I said stop." Like,
yeah.
I felt like it was a little bit Yellow Bastard, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that was intentional. I thought that was pretty cool, though. I also love, like, you know, I can't talk enough about how cool a Shadow King is, but when he emerges from the painting and he's like literally covered in dust and he's like, "What a journey I've had."
Yes.
So cool. So cool. I cannot wait for crazy young Shadow King and suave, sophisticated, older, dust-covered Shadow King to face off against David and Charles.
I mean, you'd think if someone like the Shadow King met himself like that, that actually they might end up trying to control each other.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
Or one tries to eat the other. Yeah. It'd be interesting.
There can be only one.
I know one last detail. Habiba, which is the child that was clinging to his leg in the beginning, and, you know, he mentioned that she's a mute and she's tragic and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I looked it up, and that is a name of Arabic origin that means beloved, which I thought adds a little bit of, like, a, you know, it just continues the theme of how twisted.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, how twisted his relationships with people is, that this is, you know, you'd call this person that name and then do this to them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Bastard.
So that's it. That's all I got.
Okay, let's see. One more thing about Switch is she says, "I've got the power to move through time, but my body's not strong enough." And this episode really made it pretty clear, I think, that her teeth falling out are probably just a visible indication of other trauma she's suffering. I mean, you could even see it in her face, right? She looked like she'd aged 20 years.
It's more than just her teeth now.
Yeah. And she says, looking at her teeth, "I keep on wondering if we go to the future, will they grow back?" Which was really sad.
Yeah.
There's hoping.
Some great lines. There's "Mon frère, what a privilege it is to see and be seen." I like that. I loved when Sid says to Carrie, remember how I told you about Oliver and Melanie, how they raised me? And she goes, I remember you saying that. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Carrie's a soldier. She's just like, I don't have time for this psychic moment.
Why can't we kill the baby? Oh, all right.
Yeah.
I love the thing about babies being insane, because I've definitely had those same thoughts. And cats too. And then the whole revenge. No, justice. Yeah, justice. That was really fun. I guess that's all I got. I had a bunch of notes, but we've covered them all. So nice. Let's take,
well done,
take a little break. There is more to come. Stay with us. All right, we are back. There's no news this week. It's the calm before the storm, so we'll move right into mental notes. And I thought for a change I'd just play the call first. I haven't listened to it yet, but here's our call from Steve Brown.
Hello, Aaron, Jason, and Rima. This is Steve. Hello, Aaron, Jason, and Rima. This is Steve. This is for Legion Chapter 26. And just wanted to get my thoughts in, hopefully before you record. I haven't finished my second watch of the episode yet, but, you know, I'm going to need some help on this one because, wow, it's a whole lot going on. The morality of killing baby David was an interesting conversation between Sid and girl Carrie. And obviously, I love girl Carrie. I love the character. I love everything about her and the fact that she just wants to fight something, and she doesn't get the chance really in this episode. A little bit of kicking, but not too much. And we do get confirmation that Sid was raised, did have a whole second upbringing by Melanie and Oliver, which was really, really cool to get that confirmation. And what was going on with the portrait there? Was I reading too much into it? It was kind of a Dorian Gray kind of thing. It looked like it was deteriorating throughout the episode. And now, I don't know. I couldn't tell by the end of the episode what was going on with it. So if you guys, maybe you've already cleared that up through your discussion of the episode. I don't know. Absolutely loved the whole repetition of the you should never have come phrase, and the fact that that's what Amal Farouk used to defeat the other king in his little shadow play. Love that he said the children call him the Shadow King. That was really cool because of the shadow puppets. And I just can't wait to hear what you guys thought and see how Noah Hawley wraps the whole thing up. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that I missed and didn't get to in this episode. So talk to you later.
I didn't notice the portrait changing. Did you guys?
I think it might. Yeah, it might have gotten, like, you know, a little cracked and distorted, and I just chalked that up to, you know, the Shadow King's power or the Time Demons.
But
you know,
I'm not the portrait of Professor X.
Oh,
I think that's what he's talking about.
But it was very. I did, but I couldn't quite make out the detail of what had changed. But it did look different. I don't know if.
Huh.
I don't know if it,
yeah,
he
I
had
didn't
aged.
Even notice.
Yeah, and Charles even kind of looked at it, you know, there and was kind of like looking at like, what's happening with that?
But that also was in the context of him like jumping forward in time or restarting a time loop or something. So I thought it was more of that reaction than the painting, but I could be wrong. I mean, obviously, if Steve here thinks so, and I, you know, he gives me top billing on the phone call, so I gotta appreciate that.
That's funny. All right. Let's get into some of the emails. I guess I'll go first. Laura Lozinger says, my DVR cut off the last bit. So she doesn't know how it ended, I guess. But she says, I like the idea of a David redemption arc via baby David with Sid. I half wished she'd swapped with David's mom to protect him, but it seemed like she motivated her at the end. I mean, I don't know. I think she tried, but I don't think she was successful at all.
I didn't buy it.
I don't think it's possible for her to stay in this time zone right
that
line,
either.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, like at some point, like if Switch dies, are they stranded there? Did they get yanked back, or did they just cease to exist? Like I don't know how that all works.
Right. You definitely got the impression that she wouldn't be able to just hang out.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, Rima.
Laura Willie Swink writes, "There is no good stronger than a mother's love. Sid is channeling some Harry Potter mojo there. Do you think Gabrielle's love will give David the charm he needs to defeat he who shall not be named? An interesting moral quandary as Sid is presented with the would you kill a baby Hitler dilemma. Sid decides to heal the child in order to heal the man. So happy to be looping back around to Charles and Gabrielle's story. I'm glad they continue to depict Xavier as the good shepherd, since canonically we know him as the father figure to so many mutant children who tries to guide them down the path of peace. I actually do believe if David were successful in keeping the Shadow King from possessing him, and if he'd grown up with Charles, another mutant with similar powers and a strong moral compass to guide him, that he would have grown up differently, like Sid did with her second childhood."
I don't think Gabrielle's love's going to have a chance against, you know, what's going on between, you know, between her ears and what the Shadow King's trying to do, unfortunately.
I don't think she's capable. She sounds like she's just dialing in the whole motherhood thing.
She feels real bad about it, too. Yeah. Like, she realizes that she's, like, not answering the bell, but her husband left her, and she's
falling apart.
Being tormented. Yeah, and she's all, like I said, shaky mentally, and then the Lion King. Yes, the Lion King reboot torments her. She can't believe the creepy frozen faces of the lions. She's just got all these things coming after her, and I just, like, you know, it's no moral judgment on her, but she just is not ready for this war.
Yeah, that's the thing. This show presents people who are in these tragic situations that are no fault of their own. I mean, she's been through the Holocaust. She's talking about piles of bodies. She has PTSD. And now she can't find any meaning of life and doesn't seem to have any self-esteem. And when she imagines her baby crying and thinking that it's a referendum on her, that's just a feeling that she can't shake, even though it's not true. But, you know, I've known people who just gravitate towards thinking the worst, and it's hard to be a good parent when you're in that mindset. It's impossible.
Well, she
what
even
is she, what is she supposed to do about it?
Yeah, and I mean, when Sid's like, "Well, you know, you have a baby," and she just looks at her and says, "Well, all animals fight, even when they don't, or all animals fight, whether they want to or not."
If they don't want to. Yeah.
So it's like, oh hell, that is like a bleak outlook.
Dark.
Yes.
Very, very. So it's interesting because I agree with Laura here that I think that if Charles was able to stay with David, that it would have turned out. But, you know, the fact that he was able to heal his mother with his, you know, beneficial mutant powers is indication that could have protected him from the Lion King, and he could have protected him from, you know, it could have helped him through his mental illness. And, you know, but here's, okay, am I crazy? Because that begs the question, which is, why did Charles not do that? You know?
Yeah.
Like, exactly.
Like Rima lays out a compelling case for why Gabrielle is taken off the board because, you know, she's got some problems, but, like, why doesn't Charles hunt, you know, David down? And I'm wondering if they're going to suggest that the Farouk, like, fakes their death, or otherwise disappears David, and then as he's inhabiting his mind, maybe he's using his powers to shield that presence from Charles, so he can't, like, maybe, like, as this is leading up to a theory that I've been thinking about, like, what if Charles has actually spent his entire life trying to find David, and how on a scale of 1 to 10, how awesome would it be for an elderly Charles to come back in time because he's finally found somehow David, and him, young Charles, and David all square off against the Shadow King together,
played by Patrick Stewart.
I'm not saying it has to be Patrick Stewart. That would be literally too much. I couldn't survive.
That'd be awesome. As you're saying this, though, it makes me wonder, you know, that thing I was talking about earlier about maybe things always played out this way because the timeline is just one way and David always came back in time and et cetera, et cetera. But if that's not true, if there was a version of the timeline where David didn't come back in time and interfere and Professor X was there fighting the Shadow King without David being around, then I want to know what happened to David in that timeline. Like, why did they give him up for adoption? You know, we don't really know that. I mean, I can see in this case, Gabrielle saying, wow, it seems really important that I love this child and I can't, so I need to give him to someone who can. And, you know, even if Professor X is around, maybe they would still be like, well, I think we can find two parents who are a better home for him or something. I don't know.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to the last one. Aaron.
Jamie Henry, hello all. Poor, poor Switch. This adventure with David is actually killing her, and he doesn't care. We always knew he didn't, but he admitted it this week. That she was a nobody, and he was using her as a means to an end. Even if this plan of his works, I think Switch will not be coming out of this unharmed. It was lovely to see Charles and Gabrielle again. Gabrielle was again wearing green. This time, both Charles and David had a little green on as well. Charles' tie and one stripe on David's sweater, perhaps symbolizing their connection to her. I can't believe the show is over next week, but at least we're going out on the Farouk versus Charles and David squared with Legion in the tag team astral plane cage match of the century. Take care, Jamie H. P.S. Hey, Rima, you know that how the cult girls calling David daddy all the time creeps you out? That's how I felt when all the incarnations of David were calling Charles daddy using different inflections. Shudder.
Yeah, that was a little overkill, wasn't it? Daddy.
I think the cult girls are worse, though, right?
Yes, for me, 100%.
It's weird.
We love you, Daddy. No.
And now that recording of you saying that is out on the internet. Rima.
Oh, you're right. That was.
You better have Jason. Yeah, edit that
you
out.
Need to just cut that. Wait, that does not need to exist.
Make a clip of it and put it on my soundboard. Okay,
there you go.
All right, that's our show, episode 26. Thank you for listening, everybody. You have one more chance to get in touch with us, and then we'll be gone forever. And email or send a voice message to us at legion@podcastica.com.
We'll be gone like Professor X.
Some of your father.
Oh, shit.
Hey, I've never met mine, so I'm right there with you.
Oh, shit. You can find us on the web at facebook.com/legionpod.
And be sure to check out our other great shows at baldmove.com and podcastica.com.
All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
Bye, Daddy.
Bye, Daddy.
You should never have come.